Kia ora and welcome to Emrin's Podcast, episode 171. Today is Monday, August 17th, 2009. For the first time in my life, I'm not sure if I'm going to vote. I'll tell you about that today. But first, I've got some updates on some New Zealand stories, and also actually a couple of new ones as well. But the updates first. Last time I was talking about this affliction going on in New Zealand beaches that had killed two dogs and made several others sick. And at the time, they were thinking that the cause might have been a toxic algal bloom, despite the fact they hadn't found any evidence of it in the dead dogs. Well, now they're pretty convinced that that's absolutely out of the question, because, as I said, there's no evidence in the dogs or anywhere else for that matter. At the moment, they're thinking that the cause is tetrodotoxin, which is a poison found in pufferfish. Now, pufferfish are a tropical fish that are not usually found in New Zealand waters, but somehow their toxin got into sea slugs, and that's what the dogs ate, and then they died. And others became sick. And they have no idea how the toxin got there at this stage. But this is really serious stuff. The toxin is deadly enough to paralyze humans in seconds and kill them within an hour if they ingest it. Now, obviously, most humans aren't going to pick up a dead sea slug and eat it, but it's what dogs do. And that is apparently what caused these dogs to become sick. And what it does basically is it paralyzes the heart and the lungs and causes death that way. It's sort of a neurotoxin, really. And they are still trying to figure out where it came from, how it got there. But in the meantime, they're still telling people to keep their small children and animals off the beach. If they are on the beach, don't touch any dead sea life. Touching it actually won't cause any exposure necessarily, I suppose, unless you've got cuts in your hand or something. But if you were to, say, touch something dead and then were to eat a sandwich without washing your hands, well, then you could ingest it. Although I can't imagine touching anything dead on the beach anyway, personally. But basically, this is a very serious thing. It's a very deadly toxin, and it's a huge threat to animals and to people as well. And we're certainly not letting Jake anywhere near the beach and or anyone who's been to the beach to our house until this is sorted one way or another. But in the meantime, people who would usually take their dogs to the beach for a run should probably just take them to a normal park, I would think. But it's really serious. But also in the updates, I had mentioned how Keisha Castle Hughes had been chided by the Prime Minister for speaking out on climate change, and emissions trading specifically, apparently, and he told her to stick to acting. Well, he's apparently rung her to apologize for that, and so as far as she's concerned, it's over. She hasn't talked in any great detail about what they talked about, although they apparently chatted about the topic at hand. She's a Greenpeace ambassador on climate change, which is why she was speaking out in the first place. And the thing that really interests me about this story is how it probably wouldn't have even made the news in the U.S. because it's really such a small thing. It's not like she's a major celebrity even in New Zealand. She's well-known, but no Bregelina or whatever. But nevertheless, it did make the news here and was sort of a big deal. So I guess it just kind of goes to show the difference between the U.S. and between New Zealand and a larger country like the U.S. But there's also a few other interesting things going on in the news. At least I think it's interesting. Australia and New Zealand are working to make travel as easy as domestic travel. Now, of course, New Zealand and New Zealand and Australia already have visa-free entry and residence framework. A citizen of Australia or New Zealand can go live in the other's country and work and just carry on like normal without having a residence permit or anything special. They can just go and do it. However, travel has been treated as international travel, and that's what they're trying to sort out one way or another by Christmas. Apparently. Now, the media is reporting that could result in 30% lower airfares between the countries. And I think primarily it's the Australians who will benefit from that more than New Zealanders because there's more of them. And as it happens, already the Australians have gone to the South Island ski slopes in record numbers this winter. So, that could really bode well for the tourist industry in New Zealand, which is one of the major earners of foreign exchange for the country. So ultimately, that's got to be a good thing. And there are, of course, a lot of Australians who've never been to New Zealand. Oh, speaking of Australia, their first Costco opened today in Melbourne. I don't know anything more about it than that, but it was on Sky News today. Yes, well, be that as it may. Now, the main thing I wanted to tell you about today is a bit unusual. I mentioned this briefly on Too Political a while ago, and it's a purely domestic New Zealand thing, which has sort of set me on edge, you could say. It's a referendum. It's being conducted by postal ballot, which means that they mailed out the voting papers, we mark the papers, and then we post them back for counting. They have to be posted by Thursday, I believe it is, in order to be counted, and they're going to release preliminary results on Friday, the best guess is. The background to this is that about 2 years ago, the New Zealand Parliament passed a law that has come to be called the anti-smacking law. And what it did essentially is it removed a legal defense for parents who or adults who beat children. It was up until that point, it was section, but anyway, it was a section of the Crimes Act that allowed, say, a parent to claim reasonable force as a defense if they smacked their child. Now, there was a case of a woman in Timaru who'd use a riding crop to beat the child, and the riding crop broke, from what I remember. And she was tried, and she was let off because she said she used reasonable force. Now, I don't know on what planet a riding crop is reasonable force against a child, but that's what she claimed. And so that was the situation. And the United Nations, New Zealand is also signatory to the United Nations Convention on the Child, on the Rights of the Child. And that meant that we had to take steps to try to end violence against children. So this is the background to why all this came about. Well, the right wing, as you might imagine, went apoplectic over this. They, depending on where they were coming from, some of them thought it was being a nanny state, that they were interfering in the rights of parents. But the Christian right in particular was upset about this. And there's a whole lot of reasons why that is. On the one hand, the Christian fundamentalists believe that the father is the head of the household and that the wife and the children are essentially subservient to him and that he has the right to decide what's going to happen to the children and that corporal punishment, beatings, if you will, are potentially part of that. Now, of course, they deny that. That's not in any of their literature. But if you read some of the other stuff about family life, it's very clear that that's where they're coming from. They're old school fundamentalists, by and large. The two people who got the measure on the ballot in the first place were a man who used to be an MP, and he was elected on the party list. And I've talked about how parliamentarians are elected in the past. But the point is that once he got into parliament in the last before this current election, so this would have been 2005, he jumped parties. He actually quit the party he was elected under and started a new Christianist party, a right-wing Christianist party. Well, he obviously flamed out in the last elections, in the 2008 elections, because no Christianist party has ever gotten anywhere in New Zealand elections. They're just too crazy, and that's the blunt truth. New Zealanders aren't stupid enough to throw away their vote on a party that will never form a government and will never be part of any coalition. And so they can't even get to 5% of the vote. I think the best they've ever done was 4.6% or something like that. And that was many years ago. They've been declining ever since. The other person behind the petitions, which eventually got this on the ballot, was a woman who is associated with Focus on the Family New Zealand. Now, if you know anything about the Christian right in America, Focus on the Family is one of the more extremist organizations. It's also in financial trouble, fortunately, in the U.S. They had to spin off their so-called ex-gay scam recently to another ex-gay scam, and they've had to lay off staff because of their donations are down. They are, in many respects, if they're not an outright hate group, they are verging on it in many areas, especially as relates to gay and lesbian rights, in particular. Well, their New Zealand branch office was a woman associated with that was behind the petitions. They are leading the charge to get this thing passed, and they are also allied with another Christianist group called Family First New Zealand. Now, Family First New Zealand is apparently not a subsidiary of a foreign group. However, they have ties to Australian fundamentalists and American fundamentalists as well. And I have talked about them before as well. They're a group that opposes inoculation of girls with the vaccine. Thank you. I'm saying to myself, for the vaccine to prevent cervical cancer. There is one particular virus that causes about 94 to 95% of all cervical cancer in New Zealand, and there's a vaccine for it. This Christianist group opposes the girls being given that vaccine because it means it's telling them it's okay to have sex. In other words, they would rather that their daughters die of cancer than be protected because of their particular religious beliefs. So these are the people we're dealing with here, and they're the people who are behind it. As near as I can tell, all of the people who are behind the referendum, who are pushing the referendum, are Christianist groups, right-wing Christianist groups, which is not to say that all the people who agree with them are Christianist or right-wing even. As I said, a lot of the people who were opposed to it originally were people who felt that the government was being a nanny state, and that's why they opposed it, or they didn't like the government telling them how to parent. It's not that they are right-wingers. It's not that they're even religious. It's just there other philosophical reasons why. Now, here's the referendum question, and this is verbatim. Should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand? Now, this question is one of the most fucked up referendum questions I've ever read in my entire life. And there's so many things that are wrong with it. First of all, what's a smack? The word smack does not exist in New Zealand law anywhere. Assault does, but smack does not. So what is a smack? Is a smack, you know, you just lightly tap a child with your with the tips of your fingers? Or do you have a clenched fist that you belt them across the chin? It's not defined. Now, I would gather that neither extreme is what they mean. They mean something in between, something more forceful than a light tap, but it's not as bad as an actual assault. Nevertheless, it's not defined, and it's not defined in law, so you have to guess. Should a smack as part of good parental correction? Well, what's good parental correction? And why is a smack part of it? In no way has a smack as such ever been part of good parental correction. Good parental correction is a whole host of things, and they're trying to say that a smack is automatically part of it. Well, there's plenty of us who don't agree with that. But then the final part, should it be a criminal offense in New Zealand? It is not now, and it never has been a criminal offense in New Zealand to administer a light smack, as they would call it. What is illegal in New Zealand is assault, actual violence against children, and that is new, and that's all that is illegal. Now, when these people put it forward, it became clear that it was going to cost $9 million to run this referendum. And they thought, oh, that's fine. There's no problem about it. You know, if we'd been allowed to have it during the last election, it wouldn't have cost that. Well, of course it would. The costs of running a referendum don't disappear just because you hold it at the same time as a normal election. It might have been a bit less expensive, but it still would have cost several million dollars to process all of this stuff, and it would have delayed counting of the release of the election results for probably a day, because the experience of 99 or 2002, I've forgotten which election it was. The results were delayed by about 10 hours because of two referendum questions. Actually, it might have even been 96, going back that far. Anyway, there's just about three paragraphs that I want to read from the supporters of the current law. From a pamphlet they put out, which I think pretty well sums it up. It says, "The public have been misled to believe that parents would be criminalized if they occasionally smack their children. Parents who occasionally smack lightly are not being prosecuted." And this is me again. In other words, nothing's changed. "The 2000 law has been in place for 2 years. The law has encouraged more and more parents to find ways to help children behave well without using physical punishment." And this is me again. That's undoubtedly true. The statistics show that the number of parents who use physical force against their children or who think that it's a good idea are declining. And finally, "New Zealand parents want to raise their families in a way that make children feel good about themselves, behave well, and to be safe and secure. The present law supports this. Over time, parenting without physical punishment will become part of our way of life in New Zealand." And that's absolutely true. But back to the question again, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand? Now, how are you supposed to answer that? Nobody wants to have good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand. Nobody wants to even necessarily criminalize a light smack, whatever that might be. But I mean, let's just put that aside for a second. Very few people would agree with that. So what is it exactly you're supposed to vote for? Well, the thing is, if you want the law as it is, you have to vote yes. Should a smack be part of good? Should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand? Yes, it should be a criminal offense in New Zealand. Well, no, nobody thinks that. But on the other hand, if you say no, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand? That means that you want the law to be repealed. This reason alone makes me have nothing but utter and complete contempt for the organizations that have put this on the ballot. Forgetting the $9 million they're costing taxpayers for their little vanity exercise, the fact that they are making people vote counterintuitively and to vote for something that doesn't even make any sense really deeply offends me. And so here's my dilemma. If I don't vote at all, that won't really change anything. What is going to happen, I can tell you already what's going to happen, is that the vast majority of votes received will be no votes. In other words, to repeal the law is what it amounts to. I would guess probably somewhere between 85 to 95% will be no. And part of that is because the people who are most motivated to vote are the people who are most demanding that it be repealed. Now, I could be wrong. It could end up being close to that, but that would be my prediction. Obviously, I'm not going to vote yes. That's not an option. If I vote yes, I'm going to be one of maybe 10% of the population who actually does, maybe more, maybe less. For what? If I vote, and I can't vote no, if I don't vote at all, then that means that the overall percentage of people voting will be lower by one. Or there's a third option that some of the unions are, or a couple of unions anyway, have been promoting, which is for people to vote yes and no, which will spoil their ballot, but it has to be counted. So that means that the final tally will indicate all the ballots returned, and if there's a high number that are spoiled, theoretically it would show people's rebellion at such a stupid question and such a waste of time and money. Now, getting back for a second to this waste of time and money thing I just said, the Prime Minister said in the election campaign that if the public voted in a referendum strongly to repeal, that they would have to look at changing the law. Well, since then, he said that it's unlikely there'd be any change because the law seems to be working, and he'd have to see evidence that it wasn't working before he would consider it for his government. And then I read somewhere recently, and I can't find it, he seemed to be backtracking on that, again, going back to his original position, saying, well, maybe we would have to change it if there was a huge thing, huge response. So what do I do? If I don't vote or if I spoil the ballot on purpose, neither one of those is going to drive down the percentage of people who vote no, who vote incorrectly, let's say. But if I do vote and vote correctly, which is a yes vote, then that's not going to really help much either because the percentage of people who are voting are going to be really high, the percentage of people voting incorrectly. So I am at a real dilemma. As far as I can remember, in all of the years that I've been eligible to vote, I have never deliberately not voted. There was one time when I was sick and I couldn't vote, and there was another time, I mean, literally, I couldn't get out of bed, and there was another time when I was in university and my parents were supposed to get the absentee application for me, and they didn't, and blah, blah, blah. But other than that, I have always voted without fail, even if I wasn't really happy with the choices. There have been times I've voted for people I knew couldn't possibly win rather than vote for any of the people. But I have, as a matter of fact, the first ballot I ever cast was for a referendum. It was when I just turned 18. So I don't know. So far, there have been 1.3 million ballots returned, which is about 44.3%, almost 44.4% of all of the registered voters. New Zealand has about a 94.39% of eligible voters are enrolled, which is actually quite high, obviously, although enrolling is mandatory. So not even half the voters, this is of last Thursday, a week before the deadline, not even half of the voters had bothered to return their papers yet. And my prediction was that even if 10% of the voters bothered to return the papers and they had 95% voting incorrectly, that the right wing would be rejoicing and calling it a huge victory and a mandate to change the law. So I don't know. We have until Thursday to return our ballots. We'll probably decide tomorrow or the next day what we're going to do. But I just honestly don't know. I thought about doing a video about this, but I decided against it, partly because our electoral finance laws are really hard to understand. So I might do a video after the fact, especially once the results are in. But I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. For the first time in my life, I'm at an absolute loss about what to do in an election. And I don't know. This is a really strange feeling. But the thing of it is, no matter what I do, I'm extremely pissed off about being in this position, and it's all the right wing's fault. And I should say that there are at least two different moves afoot to change the law to make sure that the question makes sense and to make sure that it's relevant to whatever it is they want to do. So you can't be forced to vote the opposite way of what you want. I mean, Proposition 8 in many respects was the same sort of thing, where the right wing deliberately sets up a situation where you have to vote the opposite way of what you feel in order to get the result you want. And if this law change actually happens, it would mean that this kind of referendum can never happen again. This kind of question, rather, can never happen again. And that would definitely be a good thing. But rather than ending up on such a grumpy note, I have some voicemails. And you know what that means? I get to play my song.
Hello? Get off my phone! Get off my phone, you little pinhead! Get off my phone! I'm going to lose my mind today.
We're sorry. The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hi, Arthur. This is Lord Byron calling, making sure your phone line stays open. Listen to your last very tired podcast, and it was sort of refreshing because usually you're so organized, and when you were just sort of having so much trouble staying focused, it was kind of brought a chuckle to my heart. So there we go. I was wondering about the consort of the night. Nigel could come up with a Maori word, you could use the Maori word for penis. Who knows? Keep up the good work, and thanks for the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Your Lordship. Yes, my phone is now secured for another month. And I don't know about another word for the consort. I think the problem is that they take their cue from Britain, and so a Maori word probably wouldn't go over very well in Britain, but maybe they could come up with something and then translate it to Latin so it sounds fancier or something. I don't know. And by the way, I have it in good authority that Illinois beat Iowa in a tug of war in Lord Byron's area. And it's something like three or four years running. I can't remember which it is. I'm sure he can fill us in on that. But it's always good when Illinois wins. Of course, I would say that, I suppose. And now I have a special phone call.
Holly, we're in Austin right now, and maybe or maybe not, just a little smidge drunkies, and I'm here with Walt.
Hi, Arthur. You're the best podcaster ever.
You are. And Diane. Hey, Archer. How's it going? No.
Oh, hi, Arthur. This is Freddie from Austin, and you're the best podcast I've heard out in New Zealand.
Okay, that was just a joke. I know it's Arthur. I just said Arthur. Everyone, I know it's because you guys are up. Well, and we're all a little drunkies, so, you know, whatever.
Diane's really drunk, so she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Anyway, we do love your podcast, even when we're sober. So, love you, bye.
No one told me who.
That's my very first drunkie call. Other podcasters have gotten drunkie calls from listeners, but I've never gotten a drunkie call before, so I feel thrilled to have finally gotten one. That, of course, was Fairy Princess Holly from We're Mean Because You're Stupid, and that was Walt, who is formerly of We're Mean Because You're Stupid, together with Diane from Tasty Jewelry, about which more in a moment, and also Pafredi from Texas. Now, of course, I've gotten to know all of them through various other podcasts and the Twitties and all that sort of stuff. But it is kind of funny that Diane would say, Archer, And whether or not she deliberately did it, I don't know. I'll reserve judgment on that. But certainly Daniel Brewer has trouble with that. He always refers to me as Archer and Archer as me. And so it's become a bit of a joke, I think, in the podcasting community. But thank you very much, all of you. And your lordship, thank you all for ringing and keeping my phone line going for another month. It's always good to not have to ring one's own phone line, isn't it? But that's it for today, everybody. I'm going to be back at least once more this week, maybe twice. Who knows? We'll see. But that's it for today. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.